Saturday, January 27, 2018. Welcome to the Daily Wrap-Up, a concise show dedicated to bringing you the most relevant independent news as we see it from the last 24 hours. While one side's main story today is about things Clinton said in response to another story and the reactions around it, and the other side's main story is Steve Wynn and more unconfirmed accusations and the reactions around it, all while Indiana passes a bill clearing the way for commercial hemp production, openly defying the archaic and subversive federal laws, the U.S. Air Force begins a massive war drill in Las Vegas, causing GPS blackouts with little regard to the major issues that could and will cause, the U.S. continues to hint at a preemptive tactical nuclear strike on North Korea that will likely never happen, that seems aimed at inciting a response in order to disrupt the peace being made, and the FBI releases info on the suspicious death of RT founder Mikhail Lezin, claiming the man apparently beat himself to death. So let's get into it. Starting with a story from yesterday by Michael Mahari, coming in of activistpost.com. Indiana committee passes bill to clear way for commercial hemp market despite federal prohibition. An Indiana House committee unanimously passed a bill that would expand the state's hemp law to prohibit state prosecution of people who sell or possess industrial hemp and industrial hemp products. Passage of this legislation would open the door for a commercial hemp market in the state, setting the foundation to nullify federal prohibition in practice. Currently, federal law authorizes farming of hemp by research institutions or within state pilot programs for research only, as if they don't already know all there is to know about what hemp can do for the world, or rather what it stands to replace, which is why it was intentionally misrepresented and confused with marijuana and made illegal. Farming for commercial purposes by individuals and businesses remains prohibited. Despite the widely known history of hemp, from rope and sales to medicine and construction, and the fact that it was mandatory for farmers to grow in our very recent past. During World War II, the United States military relied heavily on hemp products, which resulted in the famous campaign and government-produced film called Hemp for Victory. It is now prohibited for very specific and self-serving reasons, and this is not marijuana we're talking about here. And those keeping hemp illegal for these selfish and malicious reasons are well aware of this. Yet it is still lumped in with marijuana, which should also be decriminalized, in my opinion. According to a 2005 Congressional Research Service report, the U.S. is the only developed nation that hasn't developed an industrial hemp crop for economic purposes. That should tell us something. Indiana is also not the first to take these steps. Colorado was the first state with widespread commercial hemp production. Farmers began growing hemp in southeast Colorado back in 2013, and the industry is beginning to mature. The amount of acreage used to grow industrial hemp in the state doubled in 2016 to nearly 5,000 acres, and nearly doubled again in 2017. Now, I don't say this lightly, and many scoff at this statement, mostly because they've been conditioned to, but hemp can literally save the world. I mean, we could talk about so many different aspects, and I'll put some good resource material in the show notes. But hemp can be used in so many facets today, as far as medical, construction, textile. I mean, anything it can be used in right now can actually replace and be used in a better, more efficient way than the things that are being used today. And it's very frustrating to see it continue to be muddled with the idea of marijuana, which is really the only reason it's still being legalized. It has less than 0.03% THC. It can't make you high. It stands to replace many of the major industries today, and that is why it's continually illegalized. Moving on to the next story coming out of ZeroHedge.com. United States Air Force begins massive GPS blackouts in the western U.S. during largest ever war drill. The United States Air Force is launching its largest ever three-week premier set of air war drills called Red Flag 18-1, which began yesterday and will conclude on February 16th. Base officials have warned residents of increased military aircraft activity due to aircraft departing from Nellis Air Force Base twice a day to conduct air drills on the Nevada Test and Training Range. The air war drill is the largest of its kind in the 42-year history as the United States prepares for a possible conflict on the Korean Peninsula. Despite the current peace talks and despite North Korea repeatedly offering to denuclearize, if only the U.S. would cease these type of drills on their territory. The U.S. refuses to even acknowledge these offers and maintains that North Korea is the provocateur. Further, the U.S. Air Force drills at the Nevada Test and Training Range will cause rolling GPS blackouts for the vast portions of the western United States from January 26th through February 18th. All GPS-equipped aircraft operating in the western United States should be prepared for possible navigation failure in the region, not to mention the average individual traveling, driving, hunting, or any number of real-world issues that this could cause. This exercise will last a lengthy 3 weeks and could pose significant risks and threats to devices that rely rely on GPS signals, which according to the DHS chart is pretty much anything with electronics these days. But this is okay because war, right? I mean, that is what this is saying, that you guys and your small affairs don't matter because we must be prepared for a war that's not happening and that we are perpetuating. Seems legit. In other news regarding a loss of freedom coming out of theactivistpost.com written by Joe Wright, papers please. Daily citizenship checks on buses across Maine highlight constitution-free zone. And this is a story that we have talked about before many times, but the interesting and horrifying point of this article specifically is that Maine is currently and entirely in this zone, meaning anyone living in Maine effectively no longer has constitutional rights in this regard. I mean, how can that be the case? This is, the idea of a constitution-free zone in and of itself is, stupidly enough to say is unconstitutional. I mean, that's crazy. But the reality here is that this state entirely now, the idea behind this is that supposedly around the country is a zone, a 100-mile zone, wherein it's more, security tightened to make sure that there's no criminals or terrorists coming in, which is the kind of the logic. But most people are seeing this as a way to keep us secure in, to trap us in the country in a lot of ways. But that's a perspective-based idea. But the reality here is that there are places in this country that are now completely inside this area. I mean, if we even pretend the Constitution has any meaning anymore, how can you just wipe away an entire state's constitutional rights to maintain some vague premise of security? I mean, that is just staggering to me. We've touched on the story many times. That's something I'll continue to include in the show notes, but this is something we have to continue to speak out about and take a stance about. These authoritarian ideas are increasingly pushing out. I mean, it's how long until it's a 200-mile zone and 300-mile zone that continues to push in. I mean, again, that whether that happens is debatable, but the simple idea of any zone where constitutional rights are frozen or disregarded is absolutely crazy to me. Moving on to stories from today, coming out of the ntmedia.org, U.S. stealth bombers in Guam seen readying for a nuclear strike on North Korea. The first thing I want to say on this is that I do not think the U.S. would or could take a preemptive strike on any country right now with the current state of the U.S. and geopolitics. But to be clear, I'm not saying that it wouldn't or couldn't in general, as our history clearly says otherwise, only that currently both Americans and the world would likely not be okay with it, I imagine. But that being said, if the U.S. actually does take this step, it would be an unparalleled and gross violation of both U.S. and international law. Not that such a thing has stopped it, for instance, in Syria, but this is a whole new level and one that would change the game entirely for everyone. But overall, I feel this is a ploy designed to provoke North Korea and disrupt the peace being made that excludes the U.S. from the table. And another article on this topic by Bill Van Auken, coming out of globalresearch.ca, will there be a U.S. nuclear sneak attack on North Korea? The author writes, under the cover of the pre-winter Olympics thaw between North and South Korea and the momentary lull in the fire and fury rhetoric from the Trump White House, there are growing signs that the Pentagon and the CIA are pressing ahead with preparations for a preemptive war against North Korea, including the use of nuclear weapons. There have been multiple reports in the American corporate media of behind-the-scenes discussions between the U.S. military, the intelligence apparatus, and the Trump administration of the feasibility of a so-called bloody nose attack involving U.S. airstrikes on North Korean nuclear facilities, with the expectation, however ill-founded, that this would not provoke a full-scale war. In a rare public speech, CIA Director Mike Pompeo hinted obliquely at these plans. Now, again, I think this is a ploy, or I truly hope it is. But that says a lot about the true intentions of the United States, that they would simply pretend to be preparing for a nuclear attack in order to provoke North Koreans to basically launch another missile or whatever they would do to show a force, which they tend to do with these kind of things, which then the U.S. would use to say, see, they have no intention of peace and come right around and continue their efforts. I mean, this is frustrating. I mean, this should reveal just how flimsy and hollow the U.S. justifications are of maintaining peace, as clearly they are willing to stop all progress to keep control of the situation. I mean, this really has to stand out to us and make us understand the reality behind the situation here, and that peace is absolutely not the most important thing. And it's something that is actively being stopped on a lot of different fronts today. So we have to realize that. And all of these shows of aggression are happening while North Korea calls for peaceful reunification with the South. Something we've also reported on recently, but there's been new calls to essentially reunify the area. And this is something that goes against U.S. plans, but is actively seeking peace in the area. It just blows my mind. This is something that, the U.S. is actively standing against under the vague premise that it's some kind of trick. But it just to not even let it plan out or see how where it goes. I mean, especially with what's going on with the Olympics, it seems counterproductive at the very least. And again, it just gives you an insight on what the real plans are behind the scenes. And for the final story of the day, FBI releases docs claiming RT founder beat himself to death in his own hotel room. In November 2015, Mikhail Lezin, the former head of media affairs for the Russian government and the founder of Russia Today, was found dead in the hotel room that he was staying at in Washington, D.C. Originally, authorities announced that Lezin died from a heart attack. However, the results of his autopsy released months later indicated a far more sinister cause of death, and the heavily redacted FBI documents that were just released add to that story. The documents detailing the FBI investigation into Lezin's death were just released Saturday morning, in spite of the investigation ending in October of 2016. In spite of the original cause of death noted as a heart attack, a few months later, the District of Columbia's Office of the Chief Medical Examiner and Metropolitan Police Department said that the blunt force injuries of the neck, torso, and upper extremities and lower extremities contributed to Lezin's death. The Office of the Chief Medical Examiner has released the cause and manner of death for Mikhail Lezin, stating the cause of death, blunt force injuries of the head, the statement said. Now FBI investigators have released the results of their investigation, claiming that the blunt force trauma all over his body was self-inflicted. The report states, quote, Mr. Lezin died as a result of blunt force injuries to his head, with contributing causes being blunt force injuries of the neck, torso, upper extremities, and lower extremities, which were induced by falls with acute ethanol intoxication. So he apparently beat himself to death or got drunk and fell so hard that he died, according to the FBI. And essentially, all other information in regard to the findings of Lezin's death has been scrubbed from the documents, as the pages given are almost entirely redacted, other than the point, being self-inflicted. The FBI refused to allow Russian authorities to cooperate. In October of 2016, the U.S. authorities announced that Lezin died of natural causes and closed the case, without ever allowing an outside analysis. Not only is it important to ask why all the secrecy and redaction, but ask why and how it was deemed a heart attack, with all the very clear physical and visual evidence of blunt force trauma, and why it took over a year to release the wildly manipulated associated information. I think the answer is self-evident, personally, and should cast a long shadow over what is currently happening in regard to the FBI. For more information on the topics discussed, make sure you check out thelastamericanvagabond.com or any of the important independent sources in the show notes below. And as always, question everything and come to your own conclusions. Stay vigilant.